Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor, Stone Payton here for another episode of Office Evolution Radio. And Stone, this is going to be a fun one. You know, we're talking about a subject that is near and dear to my heart.
Yes, we are. And it is an exciting topic. Please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, president and founder with ProRelevant. He's an author, has a new book out called Marketing Machine. Welcome to the show, Guy Powell.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that introduction.
Well, Guy, before we get too far into things, tell us a little bit about ProRelevant. How are you serving folks?
Sure. Well, we target larger advertisers, so anybody that's spending in the $10 million, $100 million range, you would see their advertising on TV, and what we do is try and help them to spend that money a little bit better so that they get more sales out of what they're advertising for.
Now, is it make a difference if someone's spending $10 million and $1 million or $1,000 from a strategic standpoint in their marketing?
Well, it certainly does. One of the challenges that you have is that there is always a cost related to measurement of results and whether their marketing is effective or not. And so if you've got, $100 million, you've got a lot more money to be able to measure and measure in a lot more detail. As you get down to 10 or 1 or maybe even, a couple of thousand, then the ability to actually measure in a very detailed way gets a little bit more challenging.
So aside from the measuring, though, from a strategy from implementing these techniques, does that matter?
No, not really. The strategy is always the same, and the idea is to make sure that you're not just out there to market, without intention. You want to be very intentional in what you're doing and always be targeting, what your end goal is, which is to help the company grow revenue.
Now, how did the book come about?
Well, I'd written a couple of books already. I'd written Return on Marketing Investment and then the ROI of Social Media and then Marketing Calculator. And one of the things that I realized was that there was kind of a transition taking place between just measuring and looking at the past as opposed to really trying to take those measures and be able to project into the future, number one, and then also make the marketing a lot more operational. So as you measure and measure on a weekly or a monthly or a quarterly basis, use those measurements to be able to really do a much better job at predicting. And once you can predict better, then you can also, change better and react better.
Now, how much in marketing is art and how much is science?
Well, there is definitely a lot of art. There's no question about it. And that is why the creative folks get paid the big bucks. When you come up with a great idea, one of the companies, Aflac, if you think about that duck and what that duck commercial did for that company, it's incredible. It clearly put them on the map, and it clearly put them on an enormous growth curve over the last 10 or 15 years since that duck came out.
But if at the beginning of the duck, if the marketing agency said, hey, I have this idea for a duck, instead of paying me X amount of dollars for running the ad, give me a percentage, they would have been laughed out of the room, right?
Well, there's two sides to that, and we've done deals like that where you do get a percentage, and they can be very lucrative, and they also can have some challenges. The good side is if your stuff is good and you know you're good and you're confident, then absolutely, and we actually would almost prefer that with every deal we do. The problem is that when you put the future on the line, you're also betting that they're going to be able to execute. And execution doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to spend it the way you told them, but that nothing else is going to change in the company. They're not going to mess up on customer service, or they're not going to have, whatever it is. And so you end up taking in a lot more risk as the agency. And so then if that's the case, and that's what we did, is then you kind of really increase that percentage that you'd get on the success side so that you can also take a piece of that, and get compensated for that additional piece of risk.
So now part of the subtitle of the book uses the word ROI, or the initials ROI. Is that at the heart, or should that be at the heart of all marketing?
Yeah, certainly. There's also a lot of misunderstanding on ROI, or return on investment. There's the short-term piece versus kind of the long-term piece. So I may, when I do my investment in marketing, I do have to make sure that, you know, not only am I going to get sales in the short term, but I want to balance that with sales in the future. So if I'm going to try and build a brand and do some, you know, so and a commercial series like the Aflac Duck, then I'm trying to get sales in this month or this quarter, but also I want to be able to build the brand so I can get sales next year and the next couple of years.
So now you mentioned brand. So brand and like direct response, those are two types of marketing. Do you think that all businesses should be spending at least some time, energy, and money on each of those, or should you only be focused on things that are going to generate money?
Well, there's clearly a balance between the two, and the only reason I kind of hesitate a little bit is it really depends on the business. So if I'm Boeing, I'm not going for direct response. It's not like I'm going to get a lead. You know, I'm going to do a direct mail campaign or an
email. But you might be at a trade show. You might be doing some marketing that is going to put you in front of the buyer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But then that being put in the buyer is not necessarily going to get me a deal right there. But it what it can be, and that's why I was a little bit hesitant, is it can be that it gets you a direct response higher in the buying cycle. So I might get somebody to go to the website and be able to fill out a form, which might lead to something, you know, a month from now, which might lead to something else maybe 6 months from now. So, you know, the direct response doesn't necessarily have to only be about sales. It can be direct response to the web or whatever you're trying to accomplish.
And then how does marketing work when there is a lot more complexity and a lot of sales where it takes four people to sign off on something?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's and you have to differentiate a little bit between a couple of different market structures. What you're kind of talking about most likely is B2B, where I'm selling to a purchase committee within a business, and that business would have a line user and a financial decision maker.
Right, there
maker
might be the CIO has
exactly.
to bless it, the person who's going to actually use it has to bless it, and if it's in human resource, it's somebody in human resource, that, you know, like
absolutely.
There's multiple
absolutely.
Kind of people involved in saying no.
Absolutely. And there's no question that there is a difference in how you market in that case. And there's also some interesting similarities, though, to selling relatively expensive goods to a homeowner. The homeowner also has a purchase committee. Typically, it's the, you know, the husband and the wife, right? And
or in some cultures, it could be the grandparents.
Well, absolutely, you know. Absolutely, no question about it. You know, it's interesting. We did a project in Malaysia, and in Malaysia, they use a lot of infant formula for their babies, and the infant formula brand that the mom used, the grandmother used, is then typically the brand that's used now by the mom and the baby, and because there's that strong influence from the, you know, from the grandmother in that. So absolutely, there's even in a home decision, you know, a home buying decision, there could be, you know, multiple actors in participating in that purchase decision.
So now regarding the book, who is the target market for this book? Is it the end user, that kind of solopreneur? Is it for marketing agencies, advertising agencies?
Both the agency side and that means that their client has enough money to really be able to implement a lot of the operational aspects, and then of course the larger advertisers. So anybody, you know, probably advertising spending maybe $500,000 on up, and you know, it could be anything, you know, pretty large. And with the realization that, you know, what you're looking for is as certain as possible, certain results coming out of marketing and getting those investments, and then being able to do a much better job at responding in the marketplace and being able to predict what my sales are going to be over the next, you know, months, quarters.
How well do people do in this predicting part?
Medium. There's a couple of companies doing it. We've got one or two clients that we've implemented this with. And it is a challenge. There's a lot of resistance to some of this stuff because you're now taking away the creativity of some of the decision makers in the cycle, typically on the agency side. And you're not necessarily taking their decision away, but they kind of see it as they're losing their decision. So there's a lot of resistance to it, and it does take a while to get past that resistance.
Now, if somebody wasn't familiar with this, they buy the book, they say, you know what, guys, I believe him. This makes perfect sense. Let's start implementing it. What should they do?
Well, typically the first thing is, and depends on where they are on being able to measure, the first thing is are they actually measuring their marketing success? Most of our target clients are measuring it. Many of them, though, are not measuring it often enough and in a detailed enough way. Some of them are doing it in a for their digital marketing, but they're not doing it for their TV or, you know, radio or print or some of the offline stuff. So the first big step is to start to really get a very good measurement regimen going. Now, measurement, of course, means that you have to start be able to collect data, the right data. And as you can imagine, you know, there is no such thing as a free lunch. So there, you know, data is not free. But once you get that data done, once you get some measurement going, at that point, then you can start to go to the next level, which is taking that measurement, taking the that and start to predict in the future. And then once you can get a pretty good prediction engine going, that's reasonably accurate, then you want to look for what's going wrong in those predictions. Did the competition change price? Did the channel change? Was there an environmental issue? You know, did the economy change, or did the Chinese do something? And so then you want to be able to not only be able to predict, but then predict with agility. And it's that piece that really allows you to take full control of what that future is for you.
But at the heart of this is measuring.
Absolutely.
And metrics.
Absolutely.
How do you decide what are the metrics that matter? With technology nowadays, you can measure lots of things. How do you decide, okay, this is a metric worth measuring? This looks like it's a metric that's interesting, but I don't know if I'm going to spend a lot of time in measuring that. And here we call it cosmetics. Some metrics look like they're important and maybe they appear important, but if you dig a couple layers deep, you realize maybe this really isn't a metric worth measuring.
Oh, it happens all the time. We call them vanity metrics, but I like the cosmetics. I might
cosmetrics.
I like that. Yeah. I might. I'm going to
start
steal
using
that.
Right?
Exactly. Sorry about that. But absolutely. And you know what's interesting too is I was talking to the one of the VPs at Kodak before they were before
they
might have
been measuring different things.
That's exactly what they were doing. And he fixed it to some extent, but they had other problems. And the challenge is that everybody can get their bonus, and everybody can make their numbers, and the company still doesn't do well. And so
that's probably a problem.
That is a huge problem. Right. And then, of course, the CEO doesn't get his bonus because, wow, I paid these guys off, but you know, where's the profit? So that piece is critical. And you are absolutely right. There are so many metrics out there, especially in digital. I can measure this, I can measure that, and you know, it looks like I'm doing great, and it doesn't translate into sales. And what is missing, and what is really critical for the, you know, the executive team, is to make that leap between what I can measure that's relatively inexpensive versus what I should measure, which may not be inexpensive, and invest in the right metrics to be able to make sure that I'm connecting the dots from, you know, what I can measure and what is the right thing to measure to what's actually driving sales.
But when you're working with a firm and you're consulting and counseling them, how do you kind of help them make that leap? Because that's a leap of faith in some ways, because you're telling them something doesn't matter that they have believed historically mattered. And you're saying, not only does that not matter, you should be looking over here on this side. And this is really where the truth lies.
Oh, absolutely. We're doing some work with a company in financial services, and they have a sales team, and then they have, you know, a lot of marketing going on.
And they always get along perfectly, right?
And oh, absolutely. They're the best of buddies. But what's interesting is, you know, sales, as always in every company, month by month or week by week, go up and down, up and down, and up and down. And then, you know, so the first slide that we showed the VP of sales, the chief, you know, revenue officer, we said, okay, here is a slide that shows what our marketing looked like and what our sales looked like. And there was no correlation between the peaks and the valleys. Normally, if you did a lot of marketing, you could expect sales to go up. And then we showed him the exact same thing with sales. We said, here is how many phone calls you've made. Here is how many face-to-faces you've done, you know, month by month and week by week. Same thing, up and down, no correlation. And I said, so if you think that marketing is not driving sales because they're not correlated, then I would think that selling is not driving sales because they're not correlated. Of course, you know, he's a sales guy. Right. No, that doesn't
You don't work. Understand.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Well, it's interesting, too. And I don't know, maybe this is getting off, but it's a interesting story. So we were in a pitch with an airline in Indonesia, and the CMO was in there, and he said, you know, Guy, I don't think you can measure the marketing effectiveness for an airline. And I said, you know, and I thought about that, you know, because he was challenging me to, you know, to kind of come back. At least that's how I took it. So I pulled out my wallet, put it on the desk, and I said, I bet you my salary against your salary that I can measure everything that you do in marketing. And in Asia, you know, you're not supposed to do that. That's like a no-no.
That was not in the etiquette book.
That was not, but it was, you know, it's in the, hey, I'm a brash American, I guess, right. You know. So anyway, I did that, and he, you know, he sat back in his chair, and everybody else around the table, I mean, it was immediately quiet. Nobody was moving. They were going, oh, my God, I'm going to lose
Who's
my gonna job.
Who's going
to blink? Yeah, exactly. So I let him stew there for a couple of seconds, and because he didn't know what to say. And then finally I said, but I didn't tell you how much it's going to cost. Because the challenge is you can absolutely measure everything that you do in marketing and in selling. The question is it worth it? I could, you know, you give me $1 billion, you give me the national U.S. debt, I will absolutely measure everything that you do. And of course, so the question is not whether you can measure it or whether it's correlated or whatever, it's how much you have to spend. And so you have to be able to balance the investment that you make in the measurement, the data and everything against what you're trying to achieve.
So now that is, again, that opens up a can of worms, because now they go, okay, how really important is is measuring at all? If I have to spend all of my money in measuring, then I'm not going to have any money left for anything else.
Absolutely.
So you got to, at some point, you're going to have to deal with not complete information.
Well, and I also like to drive the car with my eyes open. So, you know, I like to see where I'm going. I like to find out how fast I'm going. I'd like to, you know, so that seeing where I'm going, that seeing where I'm driving is the exact same thing in measurement. And, you know, if we didn't need a speedometer, then why do they put it in the car? You know, and so that's exactly kind of the analogy that you know, we need to think about, is that measurement is not free. And to get the right measurements that may not be, you know, inexpensive, it may be a lot of money, but to get it right, if I get it right, that means that I can grow my business significantly, hopefully significantly faster than the competition, which puts me in the driver's seat as opposed to being an also-ran and losing market share.
So now when you're explaining to them that they're going to have to make this investment in an area maybe they haven't invested this much before, it's again a leap of faith that they believe that what you're saying is true. That it is, not only am I going to know what happened in the past, I'm going to be able to take this information and leverage it for future gain.
But you know what's interesting is, I mean, most people, if they've reached the senior level, are usually pretty smart. Most people, because they're smart, they realize that they should be measuring. What's been missing is kind of that business case that says, well, now I understand why we need to measure this, or this is why we need to, you know, start to determine the ROI on something. And it's the justification. Everybody's got great ideas, and there's no question about, you know, the intelligence of them in coming up with these great ideas. But the challenge for them is to sell them internally. And one of the advantages of coming in as a consultant and not working internally is you may have been saying exactly what I'm saying it, but you may not have been believed before. And now when an outsider comes in and basically says the same thing, maybe even exactly the same words, it's, oh, yeah, now I believe you. Okay, let's go off and do it.
But what about when there's a disruption? Like, I'm sure Blockbuster was keeping track of DVD machine sales, and they were all excited that it's going up every year. And then a Netflix comes in and says, we're not going to be doing that. We're going to do streaming, and this is brand new, and it doesn't exist, and it may not work. And Blockbuster's laughing, ha, 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 but DVD sales is going up every year.
Yeah, tough, really tough. I mean, you know, that's the same thing with Kodak. you know, here they are. They invented the digital camera. And, you know, and here they are. They didn't invest in it or whatever they didn't do. And all of a sudden they got sideswiped by, just like Blockbuster, they got sideswiped by something that they invented. And so, yes, they were understanding all the metrics and either seeing DVD sales going up or going down. The problem, though, is that when you're in a big company like that and you see this disruption coming, it's really hard to change.
Rarely that the incumbent creates the disruption. Like there's always some outsider with fresh eyes, or maybe the rebel that left your company and saw a better thing that you dismissed.
Mm.
And what do you think? It's just because of the inertia of the status quo and people don't want to take risk or give up what they think they have.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. And you look at some of these big companies and they're making their numbers, and you say, wow, it's hard to believe that they're still making their numbers, and yet they do. And then all of a sudden something happens, and then now they're in scrounging mode. And I'm sorry, I keep going back to Kodak, but one of the things that I think Kodak did wrong was right before they fell off, or as they were falling off the cliff, they started to, do downsizing. So they didn't downsize the senior folks, us. They downsized the junior folks. And the senior folks are just hanging on there just so that they can, you know, make it to retirement. And now, on the other hand, I think there are some companies that are truly responding to the disruption. You know, you look at Amazon. Oh, man, they are just awesome. And yet Walmart is really using their advantage, I think, to at least, not lose as much.
And Costco's hanging in there.
And Costco, they're online. You know, Walmart bought Jet.com, and being able to fulfill online, I think that was just, that was a great thing. And now they have the advantage because they have whatever it is, 13,000 or tens of thousands of stores in the U.S., and they have automatic, pickup, online order, in-store pickup. And Amazon can't beat that.
Right.
So they're clearly using their advantage to, play against what people really want to do, is just sit on the comfort of their desk, put in their orders, and then pick it up or something like that.
And I give Netflix a lot of credit because they risked everything. They had a good business that was mailing DVDs, and they said, yeah, but that's not.
Yeah, good point.
And then they said, no, we're going to go streaming, and then this is going to be kind of an afterthought now.
Yep.
I mean, not many companies of that size would put all the chips on the table and say we're going a different way.
Yeah. Although it's interesting too. Another good example, is Gillette. And Gillette, they had the one blade, and then the two blade,
right,
and the three, and the four,
blades,
and
right.
Now you kind of just touch
blades.
Your face and it's
right,
you're done. And but each one of those new razors that came out replace the old one. So you have the four blade, and all of a sudden the five blade comes out and sales of the four are going to plummet.
Right.
And so you have to have that confidence that the launch of that five blade razor is going to do what it's expected.
And then the disruptor comes in and said, "Oh, you don't need five. Here's two, and it'll mail it to you every week."
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how they're doing. I haven't watched them recently, but there's no question that this mail order, the mail order razor is doing pretty well.
So now, getting back to the book, this should be in the hands of every CMO. Who would you like to have this book?
Well, first of all, there's only 7 billion people on the planet, clearly everyone.
Everybody needs the marketing.
Everyone needs that, exactly, because you have to get a job, so you have to market yourself. But no, really, the whole marketing team. So when we do new engagements or we're pitching somebody, we do basically this training and use that
everybody
as part
gets
of
a book.
And everybody gets a book, but
you're
also
like
it's
Oprah.
For the whole team.
You're like Oprah.
Well, yeah, I do. What I need to do is get on Oprah. That's right. And if you could help me out there, just let me know.
You got it. No problem. And then so everybody in the marketing team
Correct.
Should be aware
Absolutely.
Of the roadmap, right?
Absolutely.
Because that's what this is.
Absolutely.
This is very granular, right?
Yes.
This is not just kind of the superficial hypothetical. This is kind of a step-by-step process.
Well, and that's what, that's one of the challenges of writing a book, is that you have to have the strategic piece and you have to have the operational piece. The strategic piece is for the CEO or the CMO, and actually have a whole bunch of little call-outs in there that say for the CMO. Mm-hmm. And so that they can say, okay, bang, now I get it, in a few words. And then the detail underneath there is for the rest of the team so they can understand how to roll that out.
And it's primarily for these larger enterprise organizations that are spending a lot of money in advertising?
Well, no, I think it probably down to about $500,000 or so in media. So that's, you know, clearly mid-size. And whether you're a B2B with a sales team or whether you're, you know, a consumer marketer, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, it might be a little bit much for somebody who's doing less than that because they probably haven't understood what the value is of investing in measurement yet. Mm-hmm. That might help them there. One of my other books might actually help them more, whereas this, I think, is really more for the $500,000 and up.
And then measurement is at the heart of what you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's where it begins.
Yeah. And interpretation of the measurement and making sure that when you do the measurement, that you're interpreting the numbers right based on what the business question is so that you can really give them both the strategic and tactical answers that they need.
And then if you had a piece of advice, what's some low-hanging fruit if somebody hasn't been spending enough energy and time in measuring?
Well, get started. One of my very first, and this goes back about 10 years ago, but the CMO of Atlanta Gaslight was in my very first workshop. And she says, "Guy, this is really great stuff." And it was a precursor to this book, but "Guy, this is really great stuff, but I don't have any data." And I said, "Well, why don't you do this, is get started now, and in a year, you will have data." And that's exactly what she did. 18 months later, she gave me a call, and then we took her data and actually then made some, you know, enormous differences in how they go to market.
And then what would be some of the basics of measuring? What things would you measure first?
Well, I think the first thing is even before you start measuring, is really understand what the business question is and what you're trying to do. Now, clearly, you're trying to increase sales, but I want to increase sales by spending correctly on the web, or I want to increase sales through social, or I want to increase clicks to the website, or whatever that is. Clearly define what the business question is. And then once that's done, then you can start to look at different measurement sources and then the cost of those, and then start to, you know, weigh the different attributes of the one data set versus another.
Now, if somebody wanted to get a hold of the book or learn more about your firm, what are the coordinates?
Yeah, absolutely. So the company name is prorelevant.com. So be more relevant. So prorelevant.com. The book is at marketingmachine.marketing, and you can either buy it online there, or you can buy it on Amazon.
Good stuff, Guy. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you, Lee. Appreciate it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Office Evolution Radio.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. That was fun. Yeah, absolutely. I didn't even need my notes.
Find some regular conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, you never know.